Welcome to episode 25 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this is our season 2 preview roundtable. And tonight we've got a couple of previous panelists and a couple of new panelists, but certainly not new to the GSM network. So I'm going to start with our returning, and I guess Steve is now, I think, tied for doing the most roundtable so far. Steve Brown.
Good evening, everybody.
It's great to have you back, and we'll start off, tell people about what podcast you do.
I am on co-host with Mark Kirkman on Panels to Pixels, which is on the Next Level Radio online network. And then I send in feedback to various Next Level, Golden Spiral Media, Podcastica. I love the sound of my own voice, apparently. And,
you've gotten the feedback bug.
Yeah.
But you're always very insightful in your feedback. So,
well, thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah. Panels to Pixels is my first love. And, here in the next couple of weeks with the Punisher season 2 coming back, we will begin that review for that Netflix show.
Great. So anyway, thanks Steve for, coming back. And I should mention that Steve's co-host on Panels to Pixels is my co-host on The Walking Dead Talk Through. And of course that my current co-host here, Ruthie, was the former co-host of that. But anyway, so also returning is a friend of the podcast and very prolific Star Trek podcaster, Wes Huntington.
Hi guys. Good evening, guys. How are you doing?
We're good. We're really good, and we're recording this on Friday night. We are only 6 days away from Star Trek Discovery season 2. And why don't you tell people what podcast you do?
I host the Minnesota Star Trek Nerd Podcast, a twice-a-week Star Trek podcast hosted from pretty much my apartment here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And it's independent. And I've granted, the host site is anchor.fm. But it's a lot of fun to talk about everything Star Trek. And I've talked a little bit about the other kind of Star Trek show, The Orville. Just a little bit.
Star Trek-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Star Trek homage.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just watched the most recent episode from last night, today. I liked it. I don't know. I really liked that show.
I heard it was good, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
There were two guests on the show from previous iterations of Star Trek. It was nice.
Oh, okay. All right. So we've got a couple of new panelists, but as I said, they are not new to Golden Spiral Media. First, John McGreal.
Greetings, Brian and Ruthie. Thanks so much for having me on board.
Yeah.
And you've been on a couple of podcasts from GSM, right?
Absolutely. I got my teeth cut on Stuff I Learned Yesterday. I did that for about a year. And then I did close to a year on Triple Cast, where we took three films and put them together based on some kind of theme. And we reviewed those. I did that with Corey and some other guest hosts along the way. But my full-time gig right now is Made of Steel. And we dive into the CW's Supergirl.
Yes, the DC. We have quite a few of the DC Universe podcasts on our network.
We have all of it covered except for Black Lightning and our buddy here, Martin. He does a Legends of Tomorrow for DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and that's on a different network. But we just include him anyway.
All right. And last, but certainly not least, Martin Donison.
It's not very often the Flash is last here.
Well, you're going to catch up.
Definitely. Hey, everybody.
And what podcast do you, I know you do a couple outside of the network as well as the ones that you do with GSM. So start with that. What podcast do you do, Martin?
Yeah, well, with GSM, I am co-host of Arrow Squad. I took over after Brian and Kevin, and I do that with Cammy, the Chameleon. And then with Jess, a.k.a. Harley Quinn, we do the Legends of Tomorrow podcast, which is called Tomorrow's Legends. That is just our own and under my network name, which is my main show called Cybercast. And that's the show where we talk about things we're passionate about. And that covers everything from space science to time travel to mythology, movies, TV shows, whatever. Whatever we feel like talking about, I get a host on there that shares the same passion with me, and we just dive into discussion about it.
Yeah, and I've heard you guys do a couple of Star Trek related episodes too.
Yep. Yeah, there was one. Yeah,
very entertaining. So
thank you.
All right. So we are going to start, since we didn't even cover it the last roundtable, and B, we just had the fourth one. And then actually, as we say this, I just released our podcast for the last short trek. I wanted to get an impression from you guys. So since I know that there will be some people listening, especially, and our heart goes out to our international viewers that are, you know, watching Star Trek Discovery on Netflix, that unfortunately, for whatever reasons, and I'm hoping it will change, but the short treks have not been available to you through legal means, let's just say. So we'll keep things spoiler free, but I wanted to get an impression from you guys. What did you think of the short treks? And I'm going to go in the order that I see you guys on screen. So, John, I'll ask you, what's your impressions of the short treks? Like, do you think it was a success? Do you think it was a failure? What was your overall impression of it?
I thought they were fantastic, actually, as a concept. They were really able to take on individual pieces of the series and take 15 minutes and really dive into one particular aspect. I really did enjoy it. I thought Tilly's was just a great kind of continuation of her character. Really, honestly, the one I love the most is Calypso. I thought it was beautiful. And the Homer Odyssey, you know, kind of vision that they were doing there. The Brightest Star, I thought, was just another episode, like could have totally been its own Discovery episode. And I hope we go back there. And then, of course, Escape Artist was just a fun piece of film. And I'm sure Rainn Wilson had a ball putting that together.
I'm sure he did. And I hope that he made money from it. But I would say,
if I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
Sipping jippers on a beach.
I still have it in my head. It's been 8 days and I still have it in my head. So, John, of the four, what would you say your favorite was?
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, I think Calypso really struck me. Like when I got done with it, it kept me thinking about it for a while, even days later. And it was like, wow, that was powerful. Not only for what it means for the AI and for what did she call herself? The ship's computer. She came up with her own name anyway.
Zora.
Zora, thank you.
Yeah.
But for that, that to come forward for Kraft, the whole thing was just a visual, just a really beautiful thing. And I was blown away by it.
What was your least favorite of the four?
I think the Tilly one, actually, which I know is not a popular opinion, but it wasn't anything, there wasn't anything wrong with it. It just didn't really strike me as something really powerful like the other three were. I really felt like we got significant stories within the other three. And the Tilly one was just sort of, oh, okay. Okay.
All right. So Wes, what was your general impression? What's your favorite and least favorite?
All right. I do like this format. I think that was a great idea for CBS All Access to do these, to actually whet our appetites as we approach season two. I thought that was a great idea to keep them that way, you know, keep them short and stuff like that, just to say, hey, this was, hey, there's a 15-minute episode that you've never seen before. Go watch it. But yeah, I like this format because I think if we're going to get more of these live action ones, we could potentially see more of these as we approach some other series that they're developing, like the Picard series, that kind of thing. My favorite one was Runaway, the Tilly one. I think my least favorite one was actually Calypso. The reason why is because to me it was just a little bit. I mean, I got all the classical themes out of it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I kind of didn't like it, mainly because I was expecting the Zora to be very ultra possessive and try to keep Kraft aboard.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to be like, it was typical AI going nuts and, you know, just keeping the person that they're trying to keep on board without letting him go away.
I'm sorry, Dave. But I can't do that.
Yeah, kind of like the Hell 9000 from 2001.
Yeah,
or even Beyond the Farthest Star from the animated series, with that creature that got in the Enterprise's computer system.
Yeah,
he was a lonely alien and he wanted to escape.
Yeah,
and he held the crew hostage for that reason.
Yeah, and I think you kind of alluded to it, but it's worth saying that they announced this week, amongst a whole bunch of other things, that there are going to be more short treks after season two. And it appears that they're going to be animated in origin. We'll get to that in a little bit. I know Ruthie has some things to say about that, just in general about animated, but they're supposedly, I think the name of it and the fact that they called it short treks makes them able to take that short treks and apply it to Picard or apply it to the Lower Decks or apply it to, and I'm hoping we're going to get to this point where we start doing, like, you know, essentially short stories of the Star Trek universe that have nothing to do with anything else that we've seen, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping myself.
So I think there's a lot of potential there. So that's what I'm thinking. Martin, what about you? What was your impression of the short tracks and favorite and least favorite?
Overall, I really enjoyed the idea of it because it allowed us to still be within the Star Trek world during its off season. So it allowed us to just get to reconnect with the show. And I think it was good for them because most of the episodes only had a couple actors in it. So there wasn't a big production value behind it. I'm 50-50 on the episodes. I really like two of them and I really dislike two of them. Like, there was half and half. My favorite one is Calypso. I'm with John on that one. I just love the concept. I love the performance. The acting was bang on. It was intense. It had a whole kind of Twilight Zone feel to it. It was very spooky, very moody, and that just made it really enjoyable. Right behind that, I loved Runaway with Tilly. That was a good one to start off with to give us a taste of what these short treks are going to be like. The only thing with Tilly, I will talk about a little more later, but I preferred her dark universe variant of herself than this curly red-haired one. So I was hoping we might see some of that, but oh well.
You mean...
What's that?
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
Yeah. And then after I went, the brightest star with Saru... I was really hoping for more from that because we don't know anything about his race or his species. We've never seen him before. I was hoping for, I guess, more. I didn't expect him to be such a peaceful, species that basically does nothing but camps out every day and every night. And it just, I don't know. I think I felt let down, felt disappointed with what his background really was and where he came from. And it didn't seem to suit how smart he was to be a bridge officer and so advanced in his intelligence and everything. It just didn't seem to suit where his background came from, because nobody else in his society was even close to as smart as he was. So I don't know. It was a tough one to really accept, I guess. And then that last one with Harry Mudd, the escape artist, absolutely abysmal. I cannot stand that character. I did not like when he was in the regular show, and the fact that they dedicated an entire short trek to him, I barely got through it. I had my hand on the stop button on the remote.
Wow.
Throughout that day. Same with my partner, Lisa. We were just like, this guy is so annoying. So that one, I'm unfortunately, he's probably going to come back, and probably the significance of his story is going to be huge and have some ramifications because of all the androids running around. I don't know.
So I want to drill down a little bit with that. So like, what was it? Just the episode itself that you didn't like, or the fact that, because I just listened to a podcast on the way home where one of the co-hosts of that one had a similar impression of Mudd, the fact that basically his baggage from the 60s and the way that he was, you know, extremely misogynistic and everything that you could say about the guy destroys his character now, even though they've kind of softened him a little bit. I mean, he's still a pig and like I said in the last episode, racially insensitive, but they softened him a little bit. So like, what can you say about that? Like, what is it that really gets your nerve on him?
He's annoying. I don't even know how I can put a finger on it, but the acting, the performance, just the way he talks, everything about that kind of person. The person that he portrayed is just, he's an annoying human being. And I guess in the future, I would think humans maybe would have evolved a little bit beyond that type of personality.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really hard to put into extreme descriptive words for it. It's just the character itself was annoying. I didn't find him entertaining. I didn't find him funny. I found him making me want to switch the channel kind of thing.
Well, I mean, that's good. And actually, like, the reason why I wanted to ask you about it is because Ruthie and I were pretty high on the episode, and, you know, we just had that come out. So it's good to get another opinion. So, you know, I'm glad that you shared it. So since you're next on in my order, Ruthie, what was your overall impression of the short treks? And I think I know what your favorite and least favorite are, but go ahead and share that.
I really enjoyed them. I am not quite sure I could pick a favorite, and necessarily I could definitely pick a least favorite, but the other three are kind of really tied up there. I mean, they were so different in their what they were doing, maybe what they were trying to accomplish. I was not as much of a fan of the Saru episode as the other three. I just kind of didn't really do anything for me. It was kind of like sort of ho-hum. But that could be because he's also not really my favorite character. So it's kind of in the same way that Martin doesn't like Harry Mudd. Well, I can't say that because I don't have as strong a distaste for Saru as Martin does for Harry Mudd. But he's just kind of not my favorite character. Kind of could take him or leave him. And I'm not really quite sure why, but I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel about it. The other three, though, I agree with what everyone has said about Calypso. That one, I thought it was really amazing what they were doing, what they were trying to do, I think. One of you said something about expecting the AI to be, I don't know, destructive or something, or just acting differently. And I suppose to me, I feel like, and I think this has kind of been touched on before in Star Trek, maybe the last time that the computer gave birth to an AI, or the ship gave birth to an AI, they sort of based it on their own experiences and how they were. And that sort of taught the AI how to be a good person, I guess, basically. So I kind of feel like not every AI has to be this horrible thing. And if anybody has ever watched Person of Interest, then you know what I'm talking about. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like, and I kind of talked about this on the episode that we talked about it. There is the idea of when you're young, you're very self-centered and egocentric. And when you're, as you get older, you sort of can become more aware of things outside of self, I guess. And I feel like that episode really kind of put that on display. I liked the Tilly episode because I like Tilly. So pretty much anything, if you throw her in something, I'm probably going to enjoy it no matter what's going on, because I really, really, really enjoy her character a lot. And I don't know what it was about the escape artist, but I laughed the entire time I was watching it. And I mean, to me, I understand why you don't like him and you think that he's annoying and all this kind of stuff. But to me, that's sort of the reason why he's funny, because he's so just out there crazy.
I had a thought, Martin, with regard to that. Like, what's your impression of Q?
See, Q I loved.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So, because I would say that in a lot of ways, Harry Mudd has a few things in common with Q. So that's interesting. Yeah. So
he kind of shows up and just explodes your life.
Which is pretty much what. Yeah, but yeah. See, I don't feel a threat from Harry Mudd. Whereas Q was this omnipotent being, and you could feel the threat level of him and the potential of what he could do. Harry Mudd's just harmless and not threatening to me at all.
Well, he did kill Lorca 53 times. I mean, you have to remember that. They may not have counted, but
But you know what I'm getting at, though. There's the difference if you're comparing
it. Totally. Yeah. Well, they're completely not even the same class of being. However,
right. Yeah.
They're the same type of Puck character.
Yeah. Yeah, like they throw monkey wrenches into the machinery, essentially.
Okay, I can see that connection, sure.
Yeah. All right, so to anchor the discussion on the short treks, Steve, what was your overall impression, favorite and least favorite?
So for me, I think the idea of them I really liked, and then I think the execution didn't hit me as well as everybody else, it seems. Because for me, I wanted to see things that are going to give me clues or going to have some sort of impact on the second season. And to me, I didn't see how any of these are really going to be used or have any kind of impact on the second season. I just saw them as just four separate stories that, okay, it's kind of cool, but you could plunk them in any spot really, and they fit. If I had to pick a favorite and a least favorite, I probably Calypso would be my favorite, just because of the same thing that everybody else has said, just so well acted and well shot and everything. I love the Tilly episode just because I love Tilly. The Saru episode didn't hate it, but it didn't land for me. Because I'm with what everybody else has said, I want to know more. I want to know what's the deal with the Ba'ul. And it didn't, to me, the conditions that they were living in didn't fit what was described in the first season of the show. That he described them as they are prey to this other species. And so that's why they developed fighting. That's why they're strong, and that's why they have the instincts and all that kind of stuff. But what we saw was we literally saw cattle. That's what it looked like to me. It's like cattle to us. They make a sound and they go out into the field, and a few of them stand around in a circle and they get sucked up into the abattoir or whatever, you know, and that's it. And we don't see anything after that. So we don't know that. You know, are they, when they're beamed up, you know, then do they become prey? Are they then hunted? But if they are, then they never come back. So it just, it didn't fit for me. As much as I love getting Saru's backstory, it didn't fit for the character for me, for what we saw in the first season. And then even in the Mirror Universe episodes where we see that the Kelpians are basically a slave race, you know, and they're still used as cattle, but they're used as slaves as well. So it didn't fit for me. So if I really had to pick a favorite, least favorite, that's where I would fall. But the Escape Artist was fun. I enjoyed it. It just, I didn't see the androids running around as having any sort of ramification on the second season. And that's really my only criticism of it. I didn't see anything here. You know, maybe the Tilly storyline might have some sort of ramification to the second season. If that, the whole producing dilithium comes up. Maybe if they show us why the ship was drifting or was waiting for 1,000 years for the crew to come back, maybe that comes into the second season or comes in later. But that's what I wanted, what I expected out of those short treks, was something that was going to give us clues or give us indications of the next season. And I didn't see that. So,
yeah, you bring up some good points. And, you know, before we move on, just my overall impressions. I think that, you know, I stand by what I said earlier this week. I think that the Escape Artist, sorry, Martin, but was my favorite of the four. I thought it was brilliantly written, and I do accept or know where you're coming from in terms of just, you know, his character. But in terms of the comedic, just the way it was told, the way it was directed, the way it was written, there's nothing. I think it will have nothing to do with season two at all. I don't think we're going to see Harry Mudd in season two. But the one thing I love about it is it was written by the guy, Mike McMahon, that is the creator of Lower Decks. And that, to me, gives me a lot of good feelings and good confidence that this guy's going to know what to do when it comes to writing comedic Star Trek, because I think that that script was brilliant. And especially the payoff at the end, like the last 3 minutes of The Escape Artist, I thought was as perfect as you could possibly make it. And for a story like that. So in terms of my least favorite, I hate to say it, but I think it was Runaway. And the reason for it is because it had nothing to do with Tilly. I love Tilly and it had nothing. Well, okay. I did have one problem with her story, and that was the fact that why did they not show her mother at all? Like they show her character, but then they don't show her face. It was really weird. The only thing I could think of is that they did that because they were going to recast the character. So that was odd, but the rest of her story was good. It was the character of Poe, not the way it was acted, but that whole thing of starting as a savage and ending up as a queen, I just didn't buy it. And then, like, there were so many questions on how that went that's where I had the problem with it. But in terms of Tilly and her, the acting, both of them, but the acting of Tilly, of Mary Wiseman, I mean, she's gold every time. Calypso, I had some of the same problems. I heard you guys say, like, I don't understand why the ship is 1,000 years in the future. That just makes me wonder. I want to know what the deal is with the Vidraish, and are they the Federation? That's what's been suggested. And if that's the case, like, why is Kraft's, you know, people, why are they fighting against the Federation? I loved the Brightest Star, but I do agree with you guys that I also have a lot of problems with it. Most, like, I expected to see the hunters hunting him. Hunting the Kelpians. I thought that was an opportunity that was missing there. But as I said to Ruthie when we recorded it, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that scared Kelpian makes for tough Kelpian. And that is, of course, that, you know, the meat gets gamey or whatever when they're scared. You know, there's actually, like, I have heard similar things of with wild meat and things like that, that can, you can spoil the meat. So that's what, as awful as that is, I think that's what's happening there. But there's so much of their story that I don't know, and I'm hoping, and I'm thinking we are going to see them in the next thing. So anyway, yeah, I love the escape artist, but I think it's a complete throwaway. So for this season, anyway. All right. So moving on,
Hey, Brian.
Yes,
I did want to say that one of the favorite shows that I've ever seen is Fringe. And in between some of those seasons, we would get comic books that would tie in like something of the season coming up or that kind of a thing. And it seems to me like these short treks were basically visual comic books. Yeah. They just took on a certain thing, and you know, whether it ties directly in or just keeps us in the universe, I think they really accomplished their task for that reason.
Yeah, I think so too. And the only thing you could say about them, you know, falling short is that they were not available internationally. And I think that, you know, we don't know the story as to why Netflix didn't carry them. I don't think that's been explained. I think a lot of people have tried to speculate, but we don't know. Netflix may add them when the first episode comes out. Who knows? Or they may chain them together and, you know, add them as a single episode, right? So, but anyway, we don't know those things. I really hope that you international viewers get, or listeners to us, get to see them. I think that they're worth seeing. I don't think that you have to see them though. But I think that, you know, they were good. They were like, as you can tell, I think they're a success because you're listening to the six of us and we all have favorites and, you know, least favorites. Like we're all of us are saying that, you know, this one is their favorite. And I think all four episodes were listed as favorites, and I think all four were listed as least favorite or close. So to me, that's pretty good, because that means you know, it's kind of hitting a lot of, they're effective because they're working for people. They may not be everybody's cup of tea. I never heard that any of them were bad. Like pretty much everybody said that they were. Well, I can't say that that's true, I guess, Martin, but not to single you out. I have heard people say that certain ones were bad, but in general, I mean, as a whole, it seemed like the individual episode impressions were largely positive all the way around, and I'd say largely positive as a whole. All right, so let's move on. And before we, you know, move on to like other shows and that, I want to kind of just cover Alex Kurtzman, because he's been out there in the spotlight, especially this week, talking about the Picard show and talking about Lower Decks and season two of Discovery and just other plans for the network. So as far as the plans that we know about, we know that the Picard show is apparently, you know, coming late this year. We don't have a time for Lower Decks. We've heard that there's a potential show based on Starfleet Academy. Also, Kurtzman mentioned today about like there being another animated show, like it's not just going to be Lower Decks. And there's also some talk about like a Giorgio show. And there's also like, I honestly, I think that this season is setting us up for another show, honestly. And I don't know how much I want to get into that yet. I'll get into that later. But as far as his leadership of the Star Trek universe, I'm just going to leave it open up. So anyone that wants to speak, just raise your hand and we'll talk. But what's your overall impression of Kurtzman and the job that he's doing, kind of running things? Okay, Martin?
I'm just glad that we've got Star Trek back. So if he's the one that was in charge of making that happen, then my hat's off to him, because we've gone too many years without Star Trek anything on TV. And we've, compared to how many years we had it from series to series to series. So just the fact that it's back and he's doing what he can. It doesn't matter whether you like all of it or there's something to dislike. We've got Star Trek on TV, and that's what I talk about on my show as well. We just have Star Trek. I'm happy with it. I'm happy to get to know these characters, get to see the worlds that they're building and the possibilities that they're going to go to, whether it's an older or older in the timeline or it takes place in the future, which we'll get with the Picard series. I don't care. Star Trek is back on TV, and that's what really matters.
Yeah, I agree. Wes?
I think that I'm, like I said on the last roundtable, I hope that there will be a Star Trek that's not for me. And if Kurtzman is the one who's going to be doing that, bravo. I don't care. I mean, there'll be shows like, for example, the rumored Giorgio one. I'm not kind of like, I think Section 31 has been kind of overused, in the franchise. So I think it probably wouldn't be for me, but it might be appealing to some other people, and that's fine. I'm glad that he's broadening the franchise, and that's a great thing. I'm sorry. Nothing personal against the other producers who have the franchise in the past, especially Gene Roddenberry or Rick Berman. Definitely, I like the fact that he's trying his best to diversify the fan base. I do appreciate that 100%. And I'm actually happy there's going to be a kid-friendly animated series, because we need to have the next generation, the people who are younger than us, to watch Star Trek, enjoy it. So unfortunately, this dark world that we have in our society today, we need to have a kid-friendly Star Trek series to inspire the next generation to be the Captain Kirks, be the Captain Picards of our society. So.
Well, I know someone would agree.
Yeah.
Especially when you say next generation. Yeah. And I know that a lot of people, you know, we got some feedback on our podcast of like some people that said that, you know, they liked Discovery, but they always watched Star Trek with their kids, and or they were introduced to Star Trek as a kid by their parents and that. And then they felt like they couldn't show Star Trek Discovery because of the dark themes and you know, the language and, you know, the Klingon nudity, you know, and those things. So, like, I think a children's show, Star Trek, or, you know, like a CW style, you know, like young adult Star Trek would be good. I don't know if there'll be things that I'll be interested in, but I do want to see. I think the most important thing is to make this universe be not just the make stuff, but to make good stuff and make things that people want to see, like the DC universe. I mean, you've got all those shows going on, and it doesn't seem like there's, and you know, I could say the same for Marvel. In those cases, Marvel and DC, people don't seem to be getting tired of them. They're still very popular. I mean, look at the success of Infinity War and Black Panther last year. So they're still really popular, and they're not getting tiresome. But you know, then we look at Star Wars. I hate to say, and you know, there's that backlash, and it seems like people are kind of getting tired of it. So it can be a positive thing going forward in expansion. And also say, I look at what's happened with the people in the numbers for Walking Dead. It's just, and they're trying to expand it. And, you know, I mentioned on Walking Dead talk through that it may be, you know, too little too late, because people are just, I think they're tired of zombies and it's very also formulaic. You know, it's the same kind of cyclical bad guy, and you know, everybody fights, and then you know, they make up essentially, or the fighting's over, you know, and then they get together, and then you know, they fall apart, and it's the same kind of thing over and over again. So so we've got examples of it, universes expanding and thriving, and then other universes doing not so good. Anybody else have anything to say about Kurtzman and overall just general direction of things before we move on to specifics? Okay. So I think, let me ask you this. Is there anyone that is not looking forward to the Picard series?
That's blasphemy even asking.
Okay, I'll jump in and I'll take the knives. You can stab me if you want. I mean, I'm interested in it. Honestly, I've talked about it before and I'm not going to go into it again. I'm not a TNG fan. So Picard,
wow.
I was not a Picard fan, and I know I'm going to get knives thrown at me and things here, but
blasphemy.
I'm going to watch it. I'm interested. I like Patrick Stewart. I like, you know, and I like Star Trek. So I'm going to probably watch it and check it out, but I'm not like as enthused about it as everybody else is. I'm enthused. I will say this though, and I said this earlier, I'm enthused that they're at least moving forward. We're not getting another prequel series. You know, I never watched Enterprise. I never watched Deep Space Nine. So those two shows for me, I don't have any background with them. And like I said about TNG, I'm not a big Picard fan, but so I'm interested, but I will say, if you're looking for the other side of the coin kind of thing with the Picard series, that's me. I'm not like as jazzed about it as everybody else is.
Now, I think if there, you had heard the first casting announcement that Denise Crosby is returning. I hate to say it, Steve, but that's not true.
No, that's okay.
Why do you think that you didn't watch Deep Space Nine and Enterprise?
You know, it was a time in my life when, specifically for Deep Space Nine, what was that? Was it the same time as Voyager? Was it after Voyager? Because I loved Voyager, and I watched Voyager, and I've rewatched Voyager.
Deep Space Nine came before Voyager.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there was a five season overlap.
I think I just never got into it. I just think there wasn't anything. It just wasn't at that time in my life. It didn't stand out to me as a show that I was interested in, and. With Enterprise, I think it was kind of the same thing. It just, the time in my life when that was on, I wasn't really interested in Star Trek at that point.
Now, did you watch all seven seasons of Voyager, or did you fall off at some point?
No, I stuck with it. I think I got stationed somewhere, and I think I had to miss a season or two, at one point. But I eventually came back to it.
Okay.
So I think I think I missed – there was a season in there where I think I got sent overseas or something and missed it for a little bit. But no, for Voyager, I pretty much stayed with it the whole time. I think the reason Voyager stood out to me as a series that I love, and it's probably my favorite of all of them, is because I like that Lost in Space concept.
Yeah.
I liked Stargate Universe. I liked Lost in Space. I liked just that thought of a ship of people completely that don't know where they've got a destination, but they're trying to get there, and then all the adventures they go through getting to it. So I think that's why Voyager stood out to me, and Deep Space Nine just didn't stand out to me as something I was interested in watching.
Well, it's much different, kind of stationary versus out there. So
yeah.
Okay. So you're kind of not anti Picard, but you're not as keen about it. Yeah. Rest of us seem to be pretty much gung ho for it. I know that I am.
Totally.
And anyway, so some news about Picard has been coming out pretty, especially in the last week. We've heard a lot about it, actually. For one thing, we now know that it is scheduled to debut late this year. They haven't specified a month, but we know that it's supposed to start shooting, I think, in April. So come October, November, maybe even December, the show should be coming on the scene. It has been described as a more contemplative show versus Discovery. Something, I think Kurtzman said that Discovery is like a bullet, whereas the Picard show, which they still haven't come up with a title, is supposed to be more contemplative, which I'm not exactly sure what that means. But to me, it means slower, more thoughtful, like more, I'll use an example, more Measure of a Man type of like,
nice.
Like serious issues brought up. They are talking about the fact that, and this is pretty controversial, that supposedly the fall of Romulus will be featured heavily in the story, that Picard was involved in the is essentially the events that occur in the 2009 Star Trek, which everyone thinks, oh, Kelvin timeline, are in here. Now I think all of us know that is not the case, that it actually, it's so weird as far as the Kelvin timeline. It might as well be the Kelvin universe, because essentially that's what it is. Anything that happens there doesn't affect the prime timeline, it seems. And but anyway, the destruction of Romulus happens, and Picard, it seems, was heavily involved. And if you think about Nemesis, he made friends with the Romulans in Nemesis. And it's funny, Wes and I recently on his podcast talked about Nemesis. I will say, I think I like it more than you do. But anyway, the last thing that it is, instead of shooting in Toronto, it's shooting in California. So it got a big tax break. So anyway, as far as the Picard show, and what do you think? Like, what are your impressions of the things that you've heard so far? John?
Well, I don't think Steve is wrong at all. I think this is going to appeal to just a certain amount of the audience, those who have followed Next Generation and have been invested with this character. And so I think there's only going to be so much of an audience for this show. And I don't blame you at all, Steve. I'm excited about what this could mean for Picard. I I remember being in my early 20s and or so, or even younger than that when Next Generation started. And so to watch a character that you've kind of grown alongside and to see them 20 or 30 years later and kind of what's gone on with their life, I enjoy those kind of stories. That's, I really got into The Last Jedi for Star Wars for the same reason of what the transformation of Luke Skywalker was. So I'm hoping that we're going to see, kind of what the events of Picard's life have turned him into and the consequences of that as well. And so for those reasons, I'm really looking forward to this.
Wes.
Well, I am super excited for this. Because TNG was actually the first show I actually, I grew up on TNG. So, definitely, granted, I was born during this, when the series was on, but, I enjoy the living heck of TNG and, I am super excited about this. And I'm actually, the one thing I'm wondering about, and this is something that, some fans have been asking, are they going to incorporate some of the design aesthetics from Star Trek Online? Because, it is 20 years after Nemesis, but then Star Trek Online takes place 10 years later. How is like some of the design aesthetics of Star Trek Online with the uniforms, the ships and stuff like that? Are they going to incorporate some of that design aesthetic in the Picard series, which, I would be totally on board for. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, for, practicality purposes. But I am super excited about this, and I'm kind of glad that we're getting on screen what has happened to the Federation, Klingons, Romulans, whatever, what have you, after the events of the Hobbes supernova in the 2009 Star Trek film. I'm kind of excited to see on screen what happened after that, So that's my thinking about the whole thing. I'm super excited. I can't wait.
Well, as far as that, do you think that they will incorporate the Star Trek Online stuff?
I think there probably will be some, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Who would like to go next? Martin?
Yeah, sure. I'm right with you, Wes. I am super excited because Picard is by far my favorite Star Trek captain of all time. I just liked when you think of all the captains, Captain Kirk was kind of the punch first, ask questions later. And Picard is more the diligent one, the one who wants to learn both sides of the story before he makes a decision, all that kind of stuff. And I just really appreciated how he always approached every scenario they were in. I just love that. More than once, it was the human race's existence was weighing on what decision he made. The actor, Patrick Stewart is just amazing. I was fortunate enough to get to meet him. I've met most of the cast in The Next Generation, so I'm really connected to Next Gen, like you are, Wes. I'm just really bonded to all of the characters and all the people and everything that's involved with the show. I think Picard, seeing what he, whatever this is, 20 to 30 years later, and he's dealing with all the emotions and the stuff that happened after Nemesis. I think a couple of details I read was he left the Enterprise after the fall of the Romulan Empire because he knows he was involved in that, and he's now got to deal with the emotions, the ramifications of that, what he's feeling. And this is where he's at, is now that he's dealt with all of that, where are we in his life now? And I'm so fascinated by that concept. Where is Picard? What is he doing? He left the Enterprise. All right. Well, who's Riker took over? What is Picard doing? That's what I'm fascinated. I want to see where he's at, where his head is at. Is he still involved in Starfleet? He's an admiral now. Is he some higher position? Just everything. There's so much that's wide open about his life. And I cannot wait to dive into it and catch up to Picard and join him again in his journey.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. He was a major influence, I think, in my life. I was older. I was 20 when Next Gen came out. But from that moment on, I think Picard has had a lasting effect on me, and I can't wait to see him. And I know, Ruthie, you probably have something similar to say. because we've talked about this quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going on with Captain Picard. He's probably my favorite Starfleet captain of all the Starfleet captains I've seen so far. When The Next Generation initially came out, I was kind of against it. I told my dad, I was like, I can't be Star Trek, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, just watch an episode. Well, you'll see. And I was like, fine. And I mean, I was completely blown away. There was so much stuff that was so different and updated and just amazing. So I am really super excited. And I hope that there is more than one person who comes to guest from that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And for that matter, you know, there could be, you know, many different. And, you know, speaking of other shows like, you know, Voyager and DS9, Martin, don't you have kind of a pretty good relationship with one of the actors from one of the shows?
Oh, you're talking about Garrett Wong of Voyager. Yes. Yeah, well, I wouldn't say really good relationship. We're friends. I don't get to see him that often. The guy is traveling so much. Actually, it's been a few months since I've seen them. But yeah, it's cool because he moved here to Calgary with his now wife, and he works at the Calgary Expo, which is like the Comic-Cons. And he's just doing his thing. But yeah, it's cool. I spent the Super Bowl weekend with him at their place one time 2 years ago, and you know, they invited us over to watch the game, and
that's amazing.
We've gone to the Calgary Stampede.
That's friends, I think.
yeah. I mean, we're friends, but we're not. I don't call him up and just chat.
Yeah,
like we're not that close. But yeah, I do consider him a friend. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well,
Ensign Harry Kim.
Yeah, I mean that's really cool. Like, now would he be a person that would want to get involved with, like, you know, to come on to guest appear on a Picard show, or is he basically done with acting at this point?
No, he's not done with acting. In discussions with him, when we talk about the Star Trek world, he really wants to push Voyager to come back in movie form. And it's fascinating, the ideas. I mean, you would have to get him to come on and elaborate on the ideas he has, but he thinks there's so much more they can do with the Voyager crew and the potential behind that. And I think if something like that came around, he would be on board 100%. Guesting on Picard show, I don't know, because the connections between Voyager and Next Gen are very loose. So I'm sure he would jump at the chance. I don't see why he wouldn't, but
yeah, that's a good point that there, you know, it'd be kind of fan service, but there really isn't much of a relationship there, but all right. So just in general, trying to think if there's anything else specific to mention about the Picard series. Does anyone have any issue, either positive or negative, about them using the 2009, they're going to put Picard in the Kelvin universe or timeline? Wes?
First of all, I think it's ridiculous. I want to say that first and foremost, because, you know, since that tidbit of news has come out, everyone has been saying, Picard's going to be in the Kelvin universe. And I am reminded of a few people that I know on social media, Bill Smith from Trek Geeks, and other people as well, Dayton Ward, an old, well-known Star Trek author. They had repeat after me, Romulus did not happen, the destruction of Romulus happened in the prime timeline. And it was like repeating their tweets was like that. But I'm just saying,
yeah,
that notion is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, especially, you know, for those of us that are, you know, at the level of fandom that we are, mm-hmm. But a casual fan,
yeah,
you know, one that maybe hasn't watched Star Trek 2009 in quite some time, maybe hasn't seen it since it came out.
Yeah.
You know, they hear things like I was saying, a friend of Steve than mine. I won't name him to in terms of that to embarrass him, but he got the impression that the Picard show was going to be in the Kelvin timeline. And I explained it to him, but, and he understood after that, but it's one of those things. It's like, it's not so much that either, what's to say? It's like a double effect there. You have writers who aren't fans and don't accentuate the points that they need to explain those things, you know, and then you've got the Star Trek, you know, the Discovery haters, which I really don't understand that. Wes, I don't know if you saw, you know, I posted it on the Facebook group, and I posted it, I think, on your group and a couple other, the 27-minute interview with Alex Kurtzman that Variety did that's on YouTube. And on one of the groups that I posted it at, very first guy that responded said, "Hack." And I'm just like, really? I mean, this guy is bringing back Star Trek, has got all these shows. You could see, you know, if you watch the damn video for 5 minutes, you could tell that he's deeply invested in this. And he really, really needs, not just wants, but needs to have this work. Like he feels the responsibility, I think, of what he's trying to do. And that's the first response. Hack? Really? Like are you going to tell me that you are going to be able to do a better job of running the Star Trek universe? Come on. Toxic, the whole toxic thing. And yeah, another thing about it, like this whole Orville versus Discovery crap. I love the Orville. I haven't seen the latest episode yet, but you know, I will this weekend. I haven't been that keen on the first couple episodes, but you know, in terms of season one, I loved the, especially like by the end of the season, I thought they were doing, you know, great work. But I'm not going to tell people that, you know, just because I love Discovery, I'm going to hate Orville. I think that's dumb, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I don't have this in the agenda, but I think it's worth talking about. The whole toxic fandom that we're seeing within Star Trek and in general. I mean, what do you guys think? Does anybody have anything they want to say about that?
Can I start?
Yeah, here, Brian? Definitely.
Well, the whole
– I know you have strong opinions.
Yes, I do.
And,
I have
– And that's really why strong. You're here, man.
I do. I have a really strong opinion about it. And I've done a few episodes of my podcast dealing with this sort of topic. Well, first of all, they can coexist, both Orville and Discovery. They can coexist because Seth MacFarlane is a huge Star Trek fan. I mean, granted, yeah, he guested a couple times at Enterprise. I mean, he never would have done it had he not been a fan. And I think the Orville is... kind of, I'm just going to say this right now. Orville is kind of like what Star Trek used to be, like in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. Discovery is Star Trek for the modern age in terms of the modern age of social media and stuff like that.
With toilet humor.
Yes. Yeah. The 90s Trek with toilet humor. Yeah. With dick jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I love Orville, and I do too. I love Orville. I mean, I was like you, Brian. I wasn't too keen on the first two episodes of this new season.
Yeah,
but the one that you have to see, which was, you know, the one that aired last night, was it Home? It's called.
You didn't like the Great Release?
Yeah.
I thought that the Great Release was rather disappointing because you couldn't really show it. Yeah, I mean, if anything,
you can't show that on TV, PG.
But that's the thing. It's like, you know, if they're going to go toilet humor, why did they show him taking a leak?
Yeah.
Didn't show the actual.
But then the following week, what do they show? They show the same character
having a porn addiction.
You know, and it's like I just like it, it's like they took Hollow Pursuits and they, you know, dialed it up to 11 and then they dialed it up a couple more notches. Yes. Because it's like Barkley, you know, you have to think he probably was kind of, you know, doing that kind of thing with Troy and, or, you know, I am the goddess or
whatever. I am the goddess of empathy.
Yes. But I mean, it's just like, I am not a prude. I am far from a prude. I could tell you stories, but I don't want to see that kind of story in my Trek or my new Trek or pseudo Trek.
Yes, but it's not Star Trek. That's the point.
Yeah. Okay.
It's an homage. Admittedly, like you said, Ruthie.
I just thought like the thing about Orville, and we're talking more about Orville this episode than we've probably ever talked about it. But I think that they're doing something new this season where they're doing some unusual thing with, I think there's like more commercial breaks, and because there's more commercial breaks, there's also fewer commercials. So they're like getting like 48 minutes an episode, which is great normally, but it was like they took about 5 minutes too much of the porn addiction and put it into that last episode. And it's like, it's like we talked about this, Wes, but the B plot was great, but it was mired by all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't so much that I was against the other stuff. It was just that there was too much of that porn addiction story. That it's just like, it's, dude, you know, when you have all the servants working on you, it's like, I don't need to see that.
Yeah. And and like I said, they can coexist. The Orville and Discovery can exist. I don't get it. I mean, the Orville's the Orville's fans are super toxic. Especially towards fans who love Discovery, and the main comment I see all the time: the Orville is the real Star Trek. Discovery STD is not. So screw you.
Yeah, it's worth saying. Like, you are the admin, and essentially, I think you're the lead admin on your Facebook group.
Yeah,
go ahead and give it a plug.
Yep, it is called Positive Fans of Star Trek Discovery. The reason why it's called positive is because we keep it a safe haven from those haters.
Yeah. And you had a recent experience with some haters trying to get into the group, right?
Somewhat. Yes and no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was a victim of cyberbullying from my Twitter feed, but recently, within the last few months. But
what happened with that?
Well, what had happened
is that something you want to talk about?
I could talk about it. Totally.
Okay.
I could talk about it. What had happened was, someone who gets paid to do hate on Discovery and Star Trek in general.
They get paid on it.
They get paid to hate. It's really kind of sad, to be honest with you. It's like people who work for like Midnight's Edge. People who work for them.
Okay.
It was a person. It was a woman. She called the short treks short bus treks. And if you don't know what short bus means, it means like the buses that are used to transport people who have disabilities to school.
Right.
So she called them short bus treks. She said it on her Twitter, and I reported it. And then I broadcasted that she violated the Twitter rules, and then a whole crap storm happened. So it led to me changing my Twitter handle. So it's crazy. Yeah. So I was a victim of a little bit of cyberbullying. I had fans of my podcast telling me, oh, this person, she's attacking you. And I wasn't aware, but she came on, she did like a live show about a few days later. And she said, a friend of mine tells me, she said, oh, you need to get off their high horse and, you know, just take it as a joke. Well, it wasn't a joke. It was a big insult.
Right.
And I know I did the right thing, but unfortunately, what happened was she blocked me and I blocked her. So that's, I guess, justice served, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless anybody else has anything more to say about that, we should probably move on. Since the last roundtable, we heard that we mentioned it already, but Lower Decks, Star Trek Lower Decks, an animated comedy series is coming out, and that was the creator of that is the same guy that wrote The Escape Artist. Ruthie, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about that, so I'm going to give you dibs on this. You don't?
I don't know why you think that, but oh, I don't really okay. have anything to say.
Oh, I thought, okay. I thought you'd said that you didn't want to see animated.
I said I didn't want the short treks to be animated.
Oh,
I wasn't looking forward to that.
Okay.
But I'm honestly not really looking forward to any animated series. So if the Lower Decks is going to be animated, I'm probably not going to watch it.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So sorry about that, Ruthie. I got that wrong. But as far as anybody else, do you want to see an animated Star Trek? And what do you think that's going to be like? And do you have any concerns about it, Wes?
Oh, I'm just willing to talk. So, yeah. First of all, I'm actually kind of excited about this too, because Star Trek has been the subject of spoofs since it's been around. Like Saturday Night Live and The Simpsons. Definitely.
Is that what it is then? It's a spoof? It's not like real?
It's supposed to be real. Like, it's supposed to be, I think it's not going to be like a farce or, what do you call it?
No.
It's not going to be like Galaxy Quest or anything like that. It's going to be
Galaxy Quest.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
I love Galaxy Quest.
It's not going to treat Star Trek at, like a joke. It's going to be it's going to be Star Trek in the joke, not Star Trek as a joke.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and definitely. Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward to this because I mean I knew of Mike McMahon before he actually did. The Escape Artist. I knew of him because I never watched his show Rick and Morty, but I am aware of the TNG season 8 Twitter account that he maintained. I am well aware of that one. So it was kind of funny. I actually read a bit about that book, but it was kind of funny. It was rather funny. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he's gonna do. And based on that and on The Escape Artist, I think Lower Decks, he knows his tracks, so
so
I think I have no concerns about it. It's the first animated series in over 40 years,
right?
You haven't had an animated series since the 70s.
Yeah, and it's worth saying that we have had animated Star Trek, and I think a lot of fans there are fans today that aren't even aware of the animated series. But I remember it was my first exposure to Star Trek way back. And I remember as a kid, I loved it. It honored the show. And it was great. Like my first exposure to the original series was, I think it was either the Mugatu or the Gorn, but it scared the crap out of me. And I didn't want to watch Star Trek for like a year after that. But after I got over it, you know, I was hooked. But what I think originally hooked me was the animated series. And I think it's great that we're going to get a kids show, a kids animated show. I think, you know, I may not watch it, but I am looking forward to seeing what they come up with. John, do you have any thoughts about the Lower Decks?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a pleasant diversion, and I think there will be people that will enjoy it just simply because they can make fun of this. Again, Star Wars took its own kind of route with this and made a series that's never been aired to date, but I think it was from Seth MacFarlane. But you know, it'll be fine. It's not, again, in listening to what Kurtzman said, it's like they're going to dip their toe in every kind of water possible, and they're going to see what sticks. And, you know, and there's going to be an audience for all of these things. And I mean, and looking at the different series that are coming out, I was fascinated that we're going to get things like the children's series that Wes was talking about. We're going to get something, what I read today, we're going to get something on SETI Alpha 5 between when Khan was banished and when we see him in Wrath of Khan. I mean, things like this are just fascinating to me.
That one is still up in the air. I don't think, like, I know that Nicholas Meyer was working on it, but the last that I've heard, and this may have been updated since, but the last I heard is that he hasn't heard anything back in some time about it. So it may still go, but it may not. But, you know, I like the idea. I don't think it would be something that I'd want to see a whole, like, you know, five seasons of Khan.
No.
Khan! But it's something that I would be interested in certainly seeing a limited series or a mini series on it.
Yeah. But as far as Lower Decks itself, you know, it'll be fine. It'll run a season or two and, you know, they'll move on to the next thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Steve,
I'm just not sure how they're going to do a show about, I mean, the Lower Decks is about people who are not in the, on the,
yeah, they put the color in the banana, the replicated banana.
Yeah, so I'm just curious how they're going to actually make a show about people who aren't in the thick of the action, I guess. Like, I don't really know how that's going to work out, but
I could see like,
I mean, is it going to be like a sitcom? Like,
I could see where
Seinfeld and Star Trek or something where nothing happens. It's the show about nothing.
I could see where, you know, maybe the starship that they're on is in the middle of a battle and, you know, nearly like gets destroyed and they don't even know about it or something like that. I could see that kind of story.
Yeah, I could see that too.
I don't know. I think that this guy, McMahon, has shown that he's got some talent, specifically writing Star Trek kind of stories. So if he does, Martin, I know you probably disagree, but with the amount of skill that he told in the Escape Artist, I think that it bodes well to the animated series. Anyone else have anything they want to say about the animated series before we move on?
Yeah, I kind of like the concept of it. The idea of these kind of support characters, the janitors, the plumbers, the people who do the things that we don't necessarily see, that we don't think about. You know, nobody thinks about waste management on the starship. You know, that to me is a cool concept. I'm not as for it if it's going to be geared. Now, I want to say this correctly so it doesn't sound like I'm against kids. I don't have any kids, so, you know, making a kid friendly show, yeah, I'm cool, I'm all for it, that's good, but I'm not interested in a kid friendly show, you know. So that, not that I wouldn't watch it necessarily. I went and saw the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie today just because I wanted because there's been so much talk about it, and I enjoyed it. It was good, but I like the edgier, darker comedies. So I would be cool with seeing a sitcom style starship, you know, a la the Orville, but instead of getting the bridge crew, we get the, you know, the guys that do the waste management, the guys that they clean up the shuttle bay after the shuttle crashes in there, you know, that somebody's got to walk in there and take care of that debris. So anyway,
I guess, with you were in the Air Force, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I was Air Force.
So I assume that in your role in the Air Force, you probably weren't, you know, you didn't have like a senior role like you were.
No, I was a support troop. I did supply. I was the guy who, when they had to have parts taken from, you know, broken airplane parts that went from one shop to another, I was the guy who took them from those two different shops. So maybe that's why I appreciate, I did IT for a long time too. Yeah. So, maybe that's why I appreciate a story about those characters, about,
yeah, you
know, that situation.
That's what I was going to ask about, because I figured that you could, it would kind of resonate with you. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm interested in it. I'm not as interested in if it's going to be geared toward kids. Now, I don't mean, like, when I say kid friendly, I'm okay with it being PG, yeah. But if it's geared toward kids, that's not geared toward a 40 something year old man who has no kids.
Yeah.
You know,
I completely understand what you're talking about, Steven. Like, the older I get, the less interested I am in movies that are specifically made for children. Yeah. Granted, there are plenty of those kinds of movies that I still find entertaining, like The Incredibles 2, for example. But the older I get, the less interested I am in watching all of those kid movies that come out. I'm like, you know, when I was, I don't know, 10 or 15 years younger, I still thought they were kind of fun or whatever. But now I'm like, pass. Just not even a little bit. There is too much other content out there,
yeah,
that I want to watch, that I'm interested in seeing, to spend time on a cartoon movie that I will find mildly entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Martin, I think something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I mean, on the idea of a cartoon, I think you led into it earlier about kids not being able to watch Discovery right now because it's not very kid-friendly, whereas if you watch Next Generation or Voyager, you could watch that with your family. So I think that's the bridge they need to find again. If it's going to be a cartoon, don't make it a kiddie cartoon like Ruthie was just saying. Make it a cartoon that everybody can watch. Because I still watch some animated shows. I watch Young Justice and the Justice League cartoon and some like that adults can still enjoy. So I think if they find that niche, that small corner of the market where it's an everybody cartoon, it would be fantastic. And I'd definitely be interested in that. I don't know how you could make a kid-friendly Star Trek cartoon that's for 10 and under. I don't understand how the Star Trek world could fit into that, because it's not about kids. The show has never been about kids.
The story.
So what are they going to do?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Are they going to talk about Captain what's his pants, his children, what life is like for them while he's away in the starship? I don't know. To me, that would be what's very his
pants. That's.
But that would be an interesting Captain case. So it has to be a mature cartoon. I would much rather see another show that is family friendly for everybody, and then every person can connect to somebody on the show.
Yeah. All right. If no one objects, I'd like to move on because we still got a lot to cover. And as far as the other shows that have been rumored or anything, does anybody have anything that they want to bring up on that, or can we just move on? Go ahead, Martin.
I'll just continue because you guys had mentioned a possible Starfleet Academy show.
Yeah, supposedly that has been mentioned, you know, was mentioned around the first time that a Picard show was kind of rumored. And there was actually a couple of producers that were linked to it, I think, from the OG or something like that. But as far as going forward, there really hasn't been any announcements with it yet. So it's probably in development, but they haven't like signed on the dotted line or something. But
see, now that's something I've been wanting since Next Generation, because there was countless episodes in Next Gen where they went back to the Academy.
Right.
You know, they had to go help out an admiral or help out a student. Or I think we saw a couple of Wesley Crusher's episodes when he was back there.
Yeah, the flashbacks. First duty is the one that I, you know, the first time that we see Tom Paris / Nick Locarno. I really don't understand why they did that. Were they that cheap that they couldn't use his character?
But that it's such a fascinating idea. Why? Who wouldn't look at the shirt that I'm wearing? I would love to see what Starfleet Academy is. There, you can create 10 seasons worth of content very easily about what it's like going to school to become a Starfleet officer. Where do you want to be, a science officer or a captain or like bridge officer, whatever? There are so many angles and so many stories they could go through. It'd be like a futuristic version of someone mentioned before, a CW show or something. It could be just anything, which would be great for a younger audience because it's like watching a college dorm or a university dorm, whatever, but you're in Starfleet. You're learning about getting up into space eventually. I would love that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that myself. I think a lot of it will depend on, you know, how they do it, though. But in some ways, I think the 2009 Star Trek kind of toyed with that a little bit because we see the Academy there and Kirk kind of graduated quite quickly, it seems.
Again, but that's just sparking more interest in it.
Yeah. All right. So I want – we got to get to Discovery. We've been kind of – that's what we're here for. And we've been talking an hour and a half. Still haven't gotten to it. So the thing that we know more than we knew before, I think, two things. It seems like the season is going to – focus a lot on Captain Pike, and he's not just like going to show up for a couple of episodes. It seems like he's going to be starring and a big part of this season. And we are going to see Spock. And Wes, I know that you've had certain thoughts about Spock.
Yeah, I have. I've said it numerous times. I just want to say, he's got to be shouty. Shouty Spock. Because I said this on the... you just got to have him be shouty, and he's got to be smiling. And that's the two things I really want Ethan Peck's Spock to be. Shouty and smiling. And... I'm going to say this right now. Shouty Spock with extra strength shouty. It just sounded like a deodorant when I said it the first time. I got to market that. but back to that, I'm kind of excited to see we have heard his voice now as we record this. We have heard his voice. And I think it looks like the only person he's shouting down to is Michael.
Yeah,
which is okay. I'm perfectly fine with that. If he's not barking out orders to subordinates or something like that, like he did in the cage, the women.
Oh, you mean
the women? Yeah, exactly. The women or Twister Rockets were blasting out.
Well, I think in the trailer I just saw, and unless I saw something wrong, they do show him because they show him like with a beard, and there's a line that somebody says. I think it's Pike says, "You know, Spock, did you just smile?" And the reply is something like, "Yes, sir, I did," or something like that. So we're definitely gonna get to see him. I think more than what we were thinking from the earlier trailers. So.
Yeah, and speaking about the beard. Oh my gosh. Ever since that last trailer, Steve, people have been going nuts over it. It's just a beard. It's just a beard. People have I remember there are some fans of mine, they say # the beard is canon. It's hilarious that people are like up in arms about this.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, because they kind of like, I don't know, because they kind of expected him to be clean shaven, but still have a bowl cut. But I'm just going to say this. If you were on leave and for a apparently it looks like for a medical reason, depending on the trailers that you've seen, wouldn't you not have opportunities to shave? Probably not. So
depends.
It depends on the situation.
Hey, I know plenty of guys that when we were active duty, if they had a good 2 weeks off, they weren't shaving for anybody. You couldn't get a razor near their face because
I knew we people
shaved,
like that too.
I shaved sometimes twice a day when I was active duty. So, you know, when I had an opportunity to go days without shaving, I would do it.
Yeah.
So
full beards.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It seems like the ones that are anti discovery, they just, you know, grab a hold of Spock with a beard or whatever. My favorite, of course, is, you know, we never knew about Spock having a stepsister. And it's like, well, let's think about that for a minute. We didn't know that Spock had a wife. We didn't know Spock had a, you know, that his father was the ambassador. We didn't know that Spock had a half brother. I mean, Spock has a long standing history of not completely revealing his family history.
We could have left out the half brother. I'm just saying.
Well, like you said, I was not disposed to discuss matters of a personal nature. He did say that in that film. So that's how you can explain that half-brother. That's how you can explain Michael.
But you also have to remember, John, that without that, we wouldn't have had one of the greatest moments in Star Trek. What does God need with a starship?
Touche.
Who am I? Don't you know? Aren't you God?
Exactly. Anyway, it seems like we're going to see a lot of Spock. And what do you think about this? Does anyone have anything specific, like concerns? Are you, like, really excited to see Spock, Martin?
Yeah, sure. Well, do we know what position he's going to have? Because I'm getting confused. The new movies, the old movies, the old Star Trek. Was he joined Starfleet alongside Captain Kirk, so they kind of came up through the ranks together, right? Well,
that was kind of in
the new movies.
The new movies. He was in Starfleet, I think, ahead of Kirk in the
Yeah.
Like in the cage, he is science officer and a lieutenant. So he's not first officer. He's a lieutenant. I don't know if he's like third officer or, you know, second officer. I don't know. But he's obviously not at the level. Supposedly he served under Pike for what, 11 years, I think.
Okay.
But there's so much of, like, so we know about his role in the cage and then him bringing, Pike to Talos IV in the menagerie. But beyond that, we don't really know much about the years between the cage and No Man Has Gone Before. So it's like, I think between 2254 and 2265, we don't know too much about what's gone on. So anyway, anyone have anything they want to say about Spock? It seems like, you know, do you think Spock's going to be, we're going to see like Ethan Peck's name in the main credits, or do you think he's just recurring?
I think he won't be in the main billing because I don't think he's going to be there the entire season, first of all.
Okay.
I mean, but from what I understand, Anson Mount and Wilson Cruz will be in the opening titles. But
yeah.
That's what
I want to get to Culber in a minute.
Yeah, but I don't think he'll be in the – but speaking of Ethan Peck, I don't think he'll probably be in like the closing credits and stuff like that. I don't think he'll be in the title sequence. So.
Now, what about seeing Pike though? I'll tell you I've seen a couple of videos about Pike. I've seen Kurtzman talk about Pike. I've seen Anson Mount talk about Pike. It seems like he is not a Kirk. It almost sounds like he's a younger Picard in a lot of ways. Like he really is going to utilize the crew and get a lot of feedback from the crew. That's how I understand it. Steve?
Maybe I'm wrong because I just did the rewatch. I've been in the middle of my rewatch of season one. Isn't he listed among the highly decorated captains that So Pike is in there. So we know he's not just like, I'm not saying anything. I don't want to say anything bad. I think he's going to be in the middle between kind of Kirk and Picard, kind of thing. Cause he definitely is going to have some sort of Kirk like qualities if he's been this, you know, strategic hero listed with the, not just the thinking captains, but the battling captains as well. So I think he's going to kind of fall in between maybe.
Okay. Anyone have any experience with Anson Mount on, you know, some of the other shows that he's done? Martin?
Well, my partner, Lisa, she was absolutely in love with him on Hell on Wheels. That's my experience with him.
Yeah. I did not watch all of Hell on Wheels, but I watched quite a few episodes and I thought that he was great in that. Yeah. So when I heard about the casting, I was really excited.
Me too. I like the idea of them exploring Captain Pike because we don't have a lot about him. Just the little bits that you guys have mentioned so far. I just love that we're going to get to witness part of his story that led up to the cage. Fascinated by that. So,
well, I don't know if it's going to be up to the cage or if it's going to be after the cage. I think it's after the cage.
Okay. Either way, I'm still fascinated by the character. He sounds like a captain that I really would like to know more about. So,
yeah. One thing that I heard is that apparently Pike and the Enterprise were in deep space and they essentially missed the Klingon War. And that Pike is supposedly not really got a chip on his shoulder, but feels like he's got something to prove or something because, you know, he wasn't really involved. But anyone else have anything they want to say about Pike? Wes?
Well, from what I read, that's the first I actually heard of it, Brian, what you just said. That actually is the first time I've heard of it. I'm serious. That's the first time I've heard it.
I'll have to dig up the link where I heard that mentioned.
That's fascinating because I never heard it. But two things. One, from what I understand, the crew is very, very hesitant about a new captain.
Well, they probably have some PTSD after Lorca.
Yeah, they do. And actually, from what I understand from Mary Wiseman, actually, that they're like they're very hesitant towards Pike after the whole Lorca situation. They were afraid that they not that is Pike gonna betray them like Lorca did, and that's the thing that probably he has to prove to them that he can be trusted, and you know he isn't Lorca. And then the second thing I want to mention is that Anson Mount actually revealed at that set tour that he was actually one of the finalists for the role of Lorca before they gave it to Jason. Before they gave it to Jason Isaacs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Could you imagine if it was Anson Mount playing Lorca instead of Jason Isaacs? Now that we
have, it'd be interesting.
It would have been interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he also said it, we also know the big news that Discovery, the second season has been extended from 13 episodes to 14.
Yeah.
And the reason being was because they were falling behind.
Yeah.
In schedule, in the production. So.
Yeah. Supposedly there was, and one of the things that I brought up last episode about After Trek, supposedly, one thing Matt Mira said in, this was behind the Patreon wall, but I am part of his Star Trek The Next Conversation Patreon. And he said there that I don't think he had proof, but he insinuated that the overruns of the first three episodes cost him the position and cost us the show of After Trek for this season. Like, they basically used up so much of the budget that they aren't going to go with the show because of how much they spent and how far they went over.
Yeah, I heard you say that, Brian. I actually listened to your episode today.
Yeah.
And I heard that part. I did hear that part. And I did.
Yeah.
You had shared with me the Patreon link.
Don't say that.
Whoops.
Oh. No, I just simply told you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, you simply told us all that. But
it's okay. I'll fess up. Yeah, I shared the file. I wanted somebody else to hear it.
Oh, yeah. But, of course. Yeah. And you wanted me to hear it. So that's fine. But yeah, I heard you say it about that. And that's disappointing. I mean, I said this actually for my episode that dropped today about the escape artists.
Yeah.
That it is disappointing that it's been quietly canceled. No official announcement.
Why do you think that they did that?
I took it off CBS All Access. I have no idea.
Well, that they didn't, like, originally they said it was going to be reimagined.
Yeah,
but then, like, why do they have to take it off? Like, okay, so they're not going to do it for season two. That's one thing. But why do they have to, like, remove it? I don't understand.
I don't get either. And that's one. I don't understand it either. But
yeah.
But like I said, it's disappointing. He did get better as the season progressed.
Yeah.
Especially after it wasn't live. It was definitely a lot better.
The crazy thing that I learned from that Patreon is that he got the job 4 days before he had to go live and do his first episode. That's insane.
It is. Like,
no wonder, you know, so many people watched that After Trek, that first After Trek, and were turned off. And it was, I hate to say, but it was kind of a train wreck, that first, especially that first episode.
Yeah.
But think about it, you know, he probably didn't get to rehearse more than maybe once before actually going live with it. It makes all the sense in the world when you hear that it's like, oh, that's why he was just insane on that first episode.
Yeah, when you said that,
and it had audio issues and all of that. It's because they were like down to the wire, and I don't know. It's crazy, but
it's disappointing. But life moves on, and
yeah.
He got better after I would say roughly about episode 5.
Yeah,
but especially after it wasn't live, it was pre-recorded.
Yeah.
He was a lot better.
Yeah.
He was a lot better. It was pre-recorded and stuff like that. It was a lot better. And the only reason why I watched After Trek was because, not because of the interviews or something like that he did. It was because of the sneak peeks that they had of the next episode. That was the only reason why I watched it.
And they did, and they had great features too within it. And I hope that those things continue in some form. I would have to think that they will, but it sucks. I don't think it's a necessary thing per se, but I do hope that the features continue with it. But anyway, we kind of went off on a tangent. And of course, if we've gone out on a tangent.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Got to play that. I want to just turn things around a little bit. And John and Martin, we've not had you guys on before. So I want to get just kind of an impression. Like, what did you guys think of the first season, Martin?
Well, let me put it this way. I really enjoyed it. But what I found is the show kind of hit the ground running. And the first few episodes, they kind of had this expectation that you cared so deeply about these characters already, as if you've been watching it for a few seasons. And it took a while to catch up to the show and start feeling for these characters. I just found the timing of that was a little bit off. But, you know, eventually, halfway through the season, you do start to care for them. You've caught up to them. And by the end, it was amazing. I mean, you're sucked in. You want more. Those last 4 or 5 episodes just was – it was a steamroll.
Yeah.
And absolutely amazing. The show just got so good as it went.
I think that's a good insight there, because You know, the funny thing is, I heard, you know, Aaron Harberts and Gretchen J. Berg talk about, you know, going into the Mirror Universe, and they were actually thinking about going into the Mirror Universe around season five or episode five or six. And that would have been way too early, because by then you wouldn't have known really anything about those characters. So all things considered, I think that I'm glad they went in when they did, although I've heard some people argue that maybe they shouldn't have done it until like season two or something. But yeah, you make a really good point that it's at first you're kind of, they want you to be invested when you're really not. And
exactly.
And I thought, you know, especially on rewatch, the fact that we spend the first couple of episodes not even with Discovery, and, you know, the captain dies in the second episode and all of that, like, totally unexpected for Star Trek, for that matter. But it kind of made it hard to get to feel anything about these characters, you know? Like, we didn't even get to meet Tilly until Tilly and Stamets until the third episode. Tyler until the fifth episode. Well, of course, we met Vok, didn't we? But yeah, that's a good point. John, what about you? What did you think of season one?
So I really enjoyed season one from the standpoint of how the story was told. And this is one thing that I would offer to Steve as well. If you enjoyed the serialized storytelling that Discovery was in season one, that was the hallmark of Deep Space Nine. It was a serialized story that was told episode after episode, and each one had at least some touch point on the overall story myth that was going on. And I enjoyed that from Discovery season one as well. I am in that camp of, I was a little off put at first because of how kind of dark and mature and everything that this version of Trek had gone into. This was not something that I could share with my family. And I just felt bad about that. But it seems to me that they're going to turn some of that around, I think, in season two, and maybe not be as dark as far as the storytelling goes. Overall, I fell in love with the characters. I really, really got in step with Michael and look forward to her further development in season two. And yeah, so with everything that's going on there with Spock and the mystery behind what season two is going to be, I'm really looking forward to what they've set up. And one of the things that Kurtzman mentioned was that all of the mystery that we set up in season one is going to be figured out starting in season two. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. So I know, like you said, you were really reluctant in, you didn't watch it when it was playing week to week. Like, what made you change your mind?
I figured out a way to enjoy it through some other means and that kind of a thing. And it was never about, to me, it was just a philosophical thing with CBS All Access. And I know that's not an argument that we want to get into here, but
well, a lot of people have that, you know, even now, still have that. So I understand, I don't agree, but I understand where people, cause it is like yet another service that you have to pay for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. Yeah. Okay. Well,
can I just add in one point to what he was saying there?
Yeah.
I think this iteration of Star Trek is the most violent we've ever seen, and that was actually very surprising. I didn't expect it to have the gore that it had, and expect the violence and like John was saying, the darkness. That really took me by surprise.
I think that a lot of that has to do with them trying to make this in the same vein of Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, and that in terms of like a mature audience, mature story, kind of updating it, you know, like Game of Thrones, I think in a lot of ways now is, you know, the biggest drama on TV like when it comes back in a few months, I think it's going to like hit record ratings for the show and probably for HBO and maybe for cable and blow out Walking Dead records. But I think, you know, CBS looked at that and they said, you know, we want to like hit those same kind of audiences. Where they can't is, I hate to say, but there are just some people, I don't know why, but they have an anti-Star Trek thing. They're just like, you know, oh, Star Trek's stupid. And, or, you know, maybe they're anti, you know, they're pro Star, the stupid Star Wars versus Star Trek thing. Like, so there's just some people for whatever reason, they were not going to get into it. But I think that that's kind of the audience that they were going for, the Game of Thrones, Walking Dead kind of audience. And I think that they, you know, achieved that for the most part. But unfortunately, that kind of doesn't completely map one-to-one with the Star Trek fan. And I think, and plus, I think that a Game of Thrones fan is not a Star Trek fan, and a Star Trek fan is not a Game of Thrones fan. And I think network executives that didn't completely understand Star Trek, and also, I hate to say, a lot of the decisions that Brian Fuller made, we said it on the podcast multiple times, like it was like he made decisions kind of just because he could, but tried to change Star Trek and in ways that weren't a lot of people got rubbed the wrong way. But we've been going for a couple hours and we should probably try to wrap things up here. But I think there's so much we could say about season two, but is there anything you are looking forward to in season two, Wes?
Well, I'm actually kind of curious to know about the Red Angel life forms. That's the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting. I thought of this theory about the Red Angels that appear with these seven mysterious signals across the galaxy. People have said it is the Iconians that were referenced in TNG and DS9. And I don't think it is. I think it is the beings. I think they're beings who live in the mycelial network. And they're seeing what the Discovery and the Glenn and did with the spore drives on their ships. They're seeing that as an invasion of their space. And they're now trying to say, hey, you're invading our space, stop it, or we'll wreak havoc on you. That's what I think is happening with those Red Angel life forms. And like you said, Brian, I think you're right about Discovery. I think they were trying to appeal to the fans who love Game of Thrones. But there are instances like people die, you know, people die. Like,
yeah,
Connor died twice. Danby Connor, played by Sam Varsity, he died twice in two different universes.
Yeah,
people die. It's a in war, people die, and that's one thing that definitely with Deep Space Nine did a few times, and definitely with Enterprise as well with the Zindi arc, definitely. But yes, like you said, I think Discovery was pretty much born out of Game of Thrones.
I agree with that. Like Landry died twice.
Yep.
You know, so, all right. I'll just come around. Martin, what about you? What are you looking forward to in season two?
Them having kind of a captain, the other point about season one is that's the first time we've gone through a Star Trek series without really having one single person in charge or in command. So I think having Captain Pike there is going to change the feeling on the bridge and change the way the show is run and the way the episodes are run. I think it's just going to add a little bit more of a, you know, because we didn't seem to have a lot of structure because command was always changing. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he brings to that and how it changes the way the ship is run. I wanted to ask you guys one question though before we get on too far. What you guys feel about this show takes place before Next Generation And yet, because it's so many years after in filming time, like everything is so much more modernized. We got way higher, way more advanced technology. And like you mentioned, the spore drive, and this is what kind of, what do you guys feel about that? Like these guys have access to technology and advances that they never had in any of the other Star Treks. And yet this takes place, you know, a lot farther in the past. How do you, are you guys able to just accept that and be okay with that? It's a newer show, so we should get more advanced tech, but yet it doesn't quite fit in the timeline of tech.
Wes, you raised your hand, but I'm going to take this one first. To me, I think that the Spore Drive, while it's really cool, in some ways it was a mistake, because the very first thing that I thought of, I think, in episode 3, but definitely by episode 4, is I'm thinking, well, why didn't they give that to Janeway? You know, why didn't they send the spore drive schematics to Voyager and get them back home? That, to me, is a huge hole that they need to explain. Like, because you can't tell me that the reason why they didn't use a spore drive to get back from the Delta Quadrant was ethics. That this is not going to fly. Oh, Federation doesn't do that. No. That this is desperate times make desperate measures. To me, that does not explain it. They need to explain it, and until they do, that is a huge thing. Now, it's not a deal breaker for me, because I have the belief that we're going to find out before the end of this show why there is no spore drive in the 24th century. There has to be a reason for it, and it can't just be because the Federation won't use it, because you know darn well that maybe the Federation won't use it, but the Romulans would. The Klingons, depending on who's, you know, ruling the Klingons, they would have. The Ferengi would have sold it to everyone, you know. That they have to explain it, and until they do, that it's a huge hole in continuity, but it's not an insurmountable one. It's one of those things that could be explained very quickly in a single episode, or even a single act of an episode. So that's my take on it. Wes?
Right.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think the spore drive will be eventually be classified, like will be classified by whatever organization in the Federation, probably Starfleet Command, but
Section 31.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Section 31 is probably a technology that 31 kind of had an idea about. And that's probably why you don't see the Discovery in any future reference books in the record books of the Federation, because the Discovery was probably a secret ship and no one knew about it. It was only like flag officers, and kind of like the Omega Directive kind of thing. Kind of like that kind of thinking. But
I don't know. It'd be hard to explain that though, because you know, like if the Discovery played such a huge role in the winning of the Klingon war.
Yeah.
Figuring out why, like, to me, that's not something that they could completely classify away.
Yeah.
To me, they either have to make the spore drive non-functioning and, you know, like, for whatever reason, the mycelial network just doesn't work anymore, or something else, or, you know, or there's like, we have a treaty with the spores or something. Like there's some aliens that live in the network, and
like I said,
they will annihilate, you know, they're like maybe they're the wormhole aliens for all we know.
Yeah.
From DS9. But the point being that they have, there needs to be a reason.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Discovery ends up somewhere for 1,000 years. We don't know.
Yeah, but then I also want to mention the fact about the design aesthetics were probably influenced by the Borg traveling back in time in First Contact. Let's just say, I think the
I love that loophole theory, and I saw you give that a couple of days ago. my friend Gabe from Cleveland, who I used to work with, you know, at my last company, he gave me that theory, you know, early on in season one. And I was just like, wow. But yeah, I mean, it does explain it. To me, the problem where I think a lot of people have is they look at the prime timeline as something that's linear. And I don't think that it is. I think that it is just a continuum of time. And it just happens that the Kelvin timeline is kind of a pocket, a bubble, per se, in time that where things have changed. But like the quote unquote prime timeline isn't really a timeline. It's a time continuum. You know, it's a non-linear thing to me. Mm-hmm. But to your question, Martin, I think that as far as technology is concerned, I don't think that when you consider that Star Trek is now 53 years in the making since, you know, the first when it first came out, and you know, there has to be technological breaks. And when you're trying to expand a universe or expand the fan base, I don't think that you can show, if you're going to go into the 23rd century, you can't make it look like 1966 sci-fi. It just doesn't work. So where I think Kurtzman and the prior showrunners didn't do a good job with is to say, this is the prime timeline, but we have updated the look. So please understand that the show looks different, and it's intentional because it needs to look like it's today. It can't be nostalgia. It has to be something that can move with the times. And I think in that way it has, but I don't think the message of what it is has been really conveyed well. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, and I agree with you because I'm of the angle that we don't want to see a show that's using the same technology, not even as far back as Kirk and Spock, but even far back as Next Gen. You look at Next Gen now and it looks pretty cheap and cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
They're able to make a show with the technology and gadgets and whatever and special effects they have at the time.
Yeah.
Well, here we are in 2018. They're making a new Star Trek show. Well, give us everything you got so it looks darn cool and we can have a great spectacle to behold.
And I think
now go ahead.
I was going to say, I think when we see this first episode, we're going to see the Enterprise and we're going to see the bridge of the Enterprise. I think that they have to show it, and it should be laid out in a very similar way to the old Enterprise from the cage and from, you know, the 5-year mission. It'll probably have the looks of either, you know, either universe or either time period, 2254, 2265, probably look more like 2265 based on some shots that I've seen, like Burnham and the hall and the corridors and stuff. I think it should be laid out in a similar way, but look technologically much different. And I think when that happens, I think the producers need to convey that message, say, look, this is the same universe. We've just updated it because we had to. And mm-hmm. just make people will understand if you just tell them, you know, there'll always be people that say, you know, it should look like what they did with Star Trek Continues. Star Trek Continues, great show, great thing that they did on YouTube. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend it. But it's a nostalgia play. That's it. Well written, but it's not supposed to look like 2017. It's supposed to look like 1966, and that's okay. But that's a niche thing at this point to me. Okay. Well, we've been going for quite a while, and Ruthie, unfortunately, she had to drop off. It looks like her connection dropped or something. So we probably should wrap it up at this point. as far as just final thoughts about season two, what about you, Steve? You got anything you want to just?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is what I mentioned in the last roundtable that I was so pleased to see in this last trailer is that we're going to see some Section 31 stuff. And I know you guys don't like Section 31 or it's been done to death for you. For me, like I said, I didn't watch Enterprise. I didn't watch Deep Space Nine. So for me, literally the first time I even heard about Section 31 was Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that story, those storylines, and see where they take it. And I'm not sick of it. And I like that. So I'm excited to see Georgiou again. And I'm excited to see Section 31 stuff. And Martin, we did talk about this in one of our roundtables about the whole updating the technology and the uniforms and things before. And I'm all for it. I have no problem with them updating from polyester yellow shirts to the better yellow shirts that we see in the trailer mm-hmm. of the Star Trek Enterprise. So I'm excited to see the bridge. I hope it doesn't look like the 1966 bridge. I'm kind of with Brian.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with it kind of laid out that same kind of way, but I don't want to see.
I think it should be laid out in the same way,
but I don't want to see flat. Yeah. I don't want to see flat black panels with big gigantic colored buttons on them and you know, porthole looking screens. I want to see, you know, Discovery type stuff, what we've seen from this. So anyway, I don't want to go too long about that, but I'm excited for Section 31.
Yeah. I think, just so you know, Steve, I'm totally for Section 31. I'd love to see a Section 31 series. I think that would be great. It'd be like Mission Impossible for the 23rd century, you know. But and to that, I'll just give my thoughts right now. I would not be surprised at the end of season two, I've heard Kurtzman and Heather Caden, another executive producer, say that they're so excited to sync up with canon. What does that, because I've heard them say that multiple times, that they're going to sync up with canon. What does that mean? I think at the end of season two, we are going to have Star Trek, the Pike years. They're going to go back to the Enterprise and show the 5-year mission before Kirk. And, you know, originally I didn't want to see that, but I think I want to see it now. I've already got such a great impression about Pike and Rebecca Romijn, and I think Ethan Peck is going to do a great job. I want to see that now. And I think if they, you know, like I was going to say, just own it. Just say, look, it looks different. We had to update it. Get over it, people. I don't know if you guys saw, I think it was a tweet or Instagram of Patrick Stewart today, where he held up a piece of paper and said, Discovery is Star Trek. And I love that. Just own it. It looks different, and it should, to me. But the other point that I was thinking of is this rumor about there being a Georgiou show. I wouldn't be surprised if the Georgiou show is the Pike show. And they combine those two storylines into, like, maybe the Enterprise starts having to do stuff or deal with stuff that Section 31 did. Maybe they're the ones that kind of get Section 31 buried. Who knows? So there's some possibilities there.
Incorrect.
Hi, this is Brian, and I wanted to interrupt this podcast with a short note. On Monday, they announced via press release that CBS All Access is in fact going to do a show starring Michelle Yeoh as a member of Starfleet's Section 31 division, a shadow organization within the Federation, as a spinoff to Star Trek Discovery. They haven't announced when it's going to be released. I assume it's going to be sometime next year based on when they're talking about it here. But anyway, just wanted to update you. We'll probably talk more about it after the season premiere episode, which you should be getting in your feeds in a few days. So that's it. John, what about you? Any final thoughts about Discovery Season 2?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right on board with Martin. To me, Star Trek at its essence is about this bridge crew coming together on these, you know, for the missions, the seasons, everything. And what really resonates with me in the trailers as I watch is Pike says, okay, here's the deal. You lay down your lives for me and I lay down my life for you. And to me, that speaks to what these shows are all about. And I can't wait to get back to that side of Trek. Season one was fun. It was a great exploration of what do you do with a captain that you can't trust. But I'm ready to get back to that tried and true bridge crew coming together and doing what we expect them to do.
Totally agree.
Yes.
I totally agree. I think, is everybody, Wes, do you have any final thoughts?
I do. I do have one bold prediction, if you're willing to listen to me out.
Well, you heard my bold prediction, so go right ahead.
I think, okay, we're going to see the Klingons in season two with hair, but I think Laurel will not survive the season.
You know what? I think you're right.
I think she'll be killed because of the, there are probably a lot of forces at work.
Yeah.
In the Klingon Empire that are against her as the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire. And she'll be killed because that's the way Klingons do. They don't like they don't like what's going on in power. You get rid of the main guy.
Yeah,
and that's what Klingons do.
You just reminded me of last week's Orville, when Clyden wants a divorce.
Oh yeah, yep. I know you're talking about yep. Yeah. And then. The reason why you can reconcile the whole baldness thing, you can retcon that for Star Trek VI because Chang was bald.
Yeah.
And I want to say this. The reason why Chang was bald was because he never made personal peace with the Federation. He was against them from probably the moment he was born, and he died believing that. So.
Yeah.
That's why I think he can reconcile that baldness.
Yeah. I think they will adequately
explain
it. I think they will adequately explain why the ships look so different. I think by the end, Klingons will look pretty much like they did, from the next gen years. You know, we may not get explanations of them looking like the swarthy ones that we saw in TOS, but and we already have a retcon for that with that happened in Enterprise, and of course even with Tyler himself, he could be an explanation for the way the Klingons look in TOS. But bottom line is that I'm okay with anything that they do. I just think that they need to own it. Just don't apologize. Don't hold back. Say, hey, we did this. It looks different. Get over it. And just be done with it. It's okay for it to look different. It really is. So thank you guys. I'd like to all let you plug the shows again that you do. I'll start from, again, left to right. John?
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I am on the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network at Made of Steel, M-A-I-D of Steel, and that we're covering the CW's Supergirl.
And Wes?
All right, it's the Minnesota Star Trek Nerd Podcast. I've done how many episodes now? 60-some-odd episodes? I've lost count. But, you can find the Facebook at facebook.com/MN Star Trek Nerd Pod. The Twitter handle has changed from the last roundtable thanks to that cyberbullying. It is now at MINNST Nerd Pod. So, I had to change it. That's for that cyberbullying reason. But, I'm looking forward to, on Monday, the next episode I have is going to be my impressions about the short treks and stuff like that. And then I'm going to be on Trek FM on Earl Grey, their TNG podcast. So just plugging that in, talking about the best and worst of Riker. So.
Yeah, and I got to get on Trek FM guesting on there. The only thing I've done on there so far was a patron roundtable.
A patron roundtable.
Yeah, yeah. But
and they got to spell your they got to pronounce your last name right.
anyway, I've said it, but anytime you want me on, Wes, I will come running. So just let me know.
Yep, we'll do.
All right, Martin, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me on Arrow Squad. It's talking about the TV show Arrow. So just go to arrowsquad.com for all the details there. If you like DC's Legends of Tomorrow, you can also find Tomorrow's Legends, which just go to tomorrowslegends.ca and that should take you there. Both of those got Facebook pages as well. And if you want to get passionate about topics with me, find Cybercast. And that's like Siberian Tiger, S-I-B-E-R, cast. And it's a different topic every week. Plus, I do a lot of movie reviews now due to popular request. So I have like 10-minute movie reviews of everything that's out there and some retro ones. So yeah, come find me there as well.
Ah, 10-minute movie reviews. Cool. What's the best thing that you've seen recently?
Aquaman.
Ah.
Most recently. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I've heard great things about it. I haven't seen it yet. Steve?
I am on Panels to Pixels, which is on the Next Level Radio online podcast network.
And I lastly also do, you guys have all heard it, I imagine, if you've been listening, because I mentioned in each episode, the Walking Dead talk through. Steve's been on there, and we cover The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead. We're on hiatus right now, but we'll be back in a few weeks because Walking Dead will be back in about 4 weeks' time. So until next time now, just want to say for listeners, we will be recording, Ruthie and I, Friday nights. So I realize that doesn't give you a lot of time to get your feedback in, but if you go to goldenspirmedia.com/feedback, you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget. You can call 304-837-2278. You can send us email. And I know, Steve, you've sent your voicemail clips that way. StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. And I will also, I would really like to encourage, because I know we have about at least 10 times, maybe even more than that, 20 times the listeners versus how many people are members of our Facebook group. So I want to encourage you, if you listen to us, to join our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/Star Trek Discovery Podcast. Just let us in. There's a couple of two or three questions, but just prove that you're not a bot and we'll let you in. And as long as you behave, you know, you get to be a part of our great community. So we will be recording, like I said, next Friday night, the 18th, the day after. If you don't get your feedback in time, I want to encourage you. It's all right. Send it in whenever you can. We will play it and or read it. If it's voicemail, if it's text, whatever, whenever our next episode is, we will cover it. So just send it in, even if you don't make the deadline. And the feedback from our listeners is central to the podcast. And I want to encourage all of you that if you want to hear your name, if you want to hear your thoughts, you want to share your thoughts on Star Trek Discovery, you will get to do that if you just send your feedback in to us. So since Ruthie dropped off, I'm going to ask you guys to all say the last line. So until next time, I'm Brian. Peace and long life. You guys all say,
live long and prosper.
Live long and podcast.